The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Chadwick Boseman on playing Thurgood Marshall, biopics, and Black Panther. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused, the podcast where I get to talk to the coolest actors and filmmakers.
The coolest.
The coolest. The dopest? What's the adjective to
say? The illest.
Do people say ill still?
No, I'm trying to embarrass you.
Okay, good. I was hoping because I don't think I can pull off ill.
Absolutely not. Not even a little bit.
Yeah. Chadwick probably could. He's a cool customer. He's an ill customer.
I love him.
He's great.
I've been, ever since he came in, first time we saw him at Comic-Con, I was like, ooh.
He's got it. He's got a charisma to him, to say the least. And he is not the latest addition to the Marvel Universe, but certainly he's the next person to get their own budding franchise. Black Panther opens next, I think it's next February.
I'm most excited about this than I have been for maybe any of them.
I think a lot of people share that sentiment.
He was so, in Civil War, his stuff was so good.
And I don't know if you've seen the trailer for Black Panther.
I sure have.
It's bananas. It's amazing. It looks awesome and it looks different. And it's directed by Ryan Coogler, who of course did Creed and Fruitvale Station. And so if it's half as good as the promotional materials are, I agree. I think Black Panther has the potential to break out in a different, bigger way, which is crazy to say because all the Marvel films break out in big ways. But there's something that feels a little different
about
this one.
This feels cool, yeah.
That's not necessarily why he was on the podcast, though we do talk at length about Black Panther. Yeah, and he's open to talking about sort of how he got the role and where he goes from here. But this was a great conversation. Another actor who, while I've been following for a while, I haven't had a chance really to talk to much at all. And so this was a real treat. He's had an interesting arc to his career. He's about my age, which is to say he's a very old man. No, but I mean, the interesting thing is, like, before 5 years ago or even 4 years ago, you probably didn't know who Chadwick Boseman was.
Yeah, not until 42.
Right, exactly. 42 was kind of the big break. And so, like, his 20s and early 30s, not much was going on, at least in terms of, like, film. He was kind of a working theater and TV actor, a lot of time here in New York, actually. And we talk about his New York time spent here and sort of where his head was at then and the life he wanted to lead and how he kind of found a different life working in these kind of big budget biopics, which he's been most known for. You know, he did 42, did Get On Up, and now with his new film, he continues that kind of strange, unique streak of playing real life icons, playing Thurgood Marshall, of course, the Supreme Court Justice. This is an interesting film. It's not actually even, I wouldn't even put it in the biopic category because it's not a cradle to grave kind of story. It actually tells a specific story in Thurgood Marshall's life, where he was part of it's almost like a legal thriller, and he's kind of like the guy behind the scenes that's pulling the strings in this very interesting case. It's got a great ensemble. Sterling K. Brown's in it, Josh Gad's in it, Kate Hudson's in it. It's directed by Reginald Hudlin, who has a very interesting filmography. So there's a lot of cool aspects of this film, and I'm always intrigued when someone is approaching, a real life figure and not doing the cradle to grave thing, because I sometimes think those things that try to do 80 years of someone's life in 2 hours is really tough to pull off, and it's almost like from a bygone era of film, like it doesn't work as well.
It's like Jackie, you just pick
those like two or three days or weeks or whatever in someone's life that kind of defines them, and this film does a good job at that. And no surprise, Chadwick is great in it. Another young actor who just has a good head on his shoulders.
Not that young. Yeah, said he's your age.
Well, so. He's a year younger than me, so he's still young.
He's a kid. Yeah. He's a kid.
So I believe Marshall opens this Friday the 13th.
Did you stalk him about – because he worked with one of your favorite people in the world, Harrison Ford, in 42.
Harrison is discussed in this. I wasn't digging for gossip so much as Harrison's an intriguing figure in the way that he thinks about his role in filmmaking, and that's sort of how it comes up here. You'll hear it a little bit.
I thought you were going to ask him more like exactly where on your ear you need to get the piercing,
right?
And like more of just like how you're going
to
morph.
I've given up on trying to bond with Harrison Ford. I don't know.
One day. With Chadwick.
Okay, yeah, maybe this is my way in.
Yeah.
No, this is a fun conversation for anyone that's a fan of what he's doing. I think you'll get a kick out of this conversation. So without any further ado, here is Chadwick Boseman.
Let's do a
human conversation, as if we're two normal human beings.
Hey, all we can do it is...
Oh, we can
as
do
that. Dogs.
Welcome to the only official dog podcast. That's Chadwick Boseman's. What are you doing? Which dog is that, Chadwick?
That was a Great Dane. I switched dogs.
It's been a long quest tour, clearly. You've lost
it. What must I be like that?
They're singing. They're dog noises.
All right, let's go.
It's good to see you, man. We've never really talked at length, so this is a treat for me. I've been a big fan of your work for a while, and... congratulations on this latest one, man. Marshall's the film we're going to talk about. But
thank you so much, man.
We have some time to talk about a lot of things. So one thing I want to get started with, if that's cool, is talk about New York, because I didn't realize you had like a history here, you were here for a bit.
Yeah, New York always feels. I mean, it's still home. I still have family here. My brother lives here. Cousins here. Got children here. Like, yeah, some of my greatest teachers are here. So, yeah, New York is definitely a home for me.
It's funny because I found, like, a surprising point of connection that we have in that, like, my mom runs, like, a nonprofit theater organization here in New York, mm-hmm. and works a lot with the Schomburg. And mm-hmm. I didn't realize that you did some teaching there for a number of years.
I taught some students at the Schomburg, for a number of years. Taught theater, really was, like, you know, Africana studies, mm-hmm. During a program that they have on a weekend. Sometimes they meet every once in a while. They do stuff during the week, but mostly it's weekend.
So where were you at in your life when you came to New York? Give me a sense of sort of like where that fit into the Chadwick Boseman story.
I was a struggling artist. Yeah. You know, I the best way to put it is, you know, I was doing everything I could artistically to sort of stay in it, including music stuff. Like I was doing hip hop theater, which is basically we would take the elements of hip hop and put it in a story. So the dialogue would sometimes be rhyming, or, you know, I wrote a one script. It was almost like you're looking at Shakespeare, but it's hip hop slang.
Right. And is that partially to make it like accessible for different audiences?
It was just the culture we were living in. I think we started doing it in DC when I was at Howard, and it just became a method of expression. It was an offshoot of the underground hip hop, underground hip hop movement and the performance poetry movement / the dance, because we had b-boys, we had DJs, were like the orchestra. It was a whole...
So just like using the vernacular of the time, way we conversed and applying that to some classical
concept
too.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, let's make this cool for the kids. Right. No, it was just that was the way we told stories. And then the Hip Hop Theater Festival existed. I guess it still exists. I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but it existed in New York for years. Various different types of performance, different ways of doing hip hop theater. And so now you see Hamilton, that is like the
ultimate extension of the
commercial version of what we were doing. But
you see Hamilton, you're like, yeah, been there, done that.
Pretty much. But no, it's not to take anything away from it, but it is literally like we were doing that way before. So
amazing.
So I was doing a little bit of everything. I was doing Shakespeare, I was directing, I was writing, I was doing every little reading to anybody had. So I just wanted to be in the mix and be an artist, you know.
Were you making a living? Like, were you able to like kind of get by?
Well, I was to some degree, but I also was teaching at the Schomburg. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knows what that like teaching artist thing was. But yeah, it was a gradual thing. I think when you walk that road and you're truly, I have a lot of people that will tell me they want to be actors, and they're in LA or they're in, you know, Atlanta, you know, and they're like, you know, how do you do it? Like, you know, and they have no idea, you know, because they think it's all about showing up in front of the camera.
Right.
They have no idea how many rooms I sat in with other performers, not just actors, performers. And we just wanted to create, you know.
Yeah.
We weren't even thinking about where we're going to get paid. That was an afterthought. And so what I tell people, it's just like, it's, you have to love what you do first.
Yeah.
And you know, all the other stuff will come. I'm not saying don't be business-minded. But, you know, I can always tell whether somebody really loves it or they just want the outcome.
Were you, and did you have, besides stuff like teaching at the Schomburg, did you have like kind of like, did you have to wait tables? Did you have to do any of that kind of stuff?
Or I never did.
Between the acting gigs.
Yeah, I never. I just did enough stuff that
just
was
to get by.
That, yeah. Well, it was like I want to stay in the midst of this. If I'm right. teaching it, I'm learning. If I'm
everything fed into what you
yeah,
want.
If I'm doing voiceovers, I did a lot of voiceovers. I didn't do you know, on camera commercials.
Right.
Because I was like, I don't really want to, I don't know if that's my, you know, there's a sort of an elitist feeling. I don't want to do on-camera commercials. I just want to be like that Robert De Niro type actor, you know.
With CW show. Yeah. I don't want to be the seventh lead on Gossip Girl.
Yeah, so, but I did voiceovers a lot, you know. I did, and that paid. Actually, that actually got me through.
Voiceovers do take
voiceovers
pay.
You like, what? Thank you.
What kind of voiceovers did you do?
Thank you.
What was the best gig?
Fast food. lots of fast food.
Any particular lines come to mind?
Subway. I don't remember the lines.
You flush those out.
I don't remember. Yeah, I flushed those out of my system. Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's a good word for it. Too. Yeah.
So, I mean, it is fascinating because that's kind of like the big picture thing that really struck me when I was reading up on you, that people don't realize.
I even did an audio book. I did an audio book that got nominated for a Grammy. Like, nice. Yeah.
And did you get the nomination?
I can't even remember. Upstate. That was the name of it. Upstate. Okay. Yeah. I forgot the name of that thing.
I feel like your whole team was like, really?
Yeah.
In the room.
Yeah. Like, forgot about that.
So
it was good too.
I'm sure. But it's interesting because, yeah, for those that don't like look at your full body of work and kind of like look at the timeline, you know, you have a very atypical trajectory for an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as you well know, it's like in this like kind of youth obsessed culture where it's like, you gotta be the 22-year-old and he's going to be the next big star. It took you a bit to kind of like make the leap.
Yeah. And I didn't want it. That was the thing about it. It was like, I truthfully was more interested at one point in time, I think, in writing and you know, I was, you know, reading books. I didn't necessarily want it. I didn't want that. I was like kind of crazy. Like,
what was it that about? You were saying like kind of like, I mean, did you feel like you were better than not in a negative way? I'm not trying to like make you sound like holier than thou, but like, were you just not into kind of sort of like the opportunities that were presenting themselves, or
I think you can be, it's weird to say this, but you can not define, you know, I'm not saying that it was a good thing at all, but you can exist in a place where you have a certain amount of success amongst your peers.
Mm.
You have a certain amount of success amongst artists around you. And you view them as being as good as anybody that you see on TV.
Right.
Even
if they're not famous.
Even if they're not famous.
Yeah,
I'm like, you know, I dare anybody to mess with anybody from my clan. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how you
put them up against anybody,
right? That's how you feel.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a thing of, I remember there was a producer, Woody King Jr., who I love. Who is over at New Federal Theater, off Broadway Theater, and he kept telling me, "Man, you got to go out to L.A. Man." He was pushing me to go out to idea one of his plays. He said, "We're gonna do the play out," and I was like, "Nah, I don't. You know, it's Hollywood. I don't feel like." So I had this sort of misconception about what Hollywood was.
Right.
And then I also had at another point when I did want to go, a set of agents who I think really didn't believe in me. And they kept saying, yeah, you're going to go out there, you're going to get swallowed up. So they produced this sort of fear of what it was. Mm. And I think sometimes you can be in New York or Chicago, or because Chicago is also a really good hub where you can do theater.
Amazing theater town, yeah.
And there's quite a bit of TV and film there, too. But you can be in a certain hub and have, you know, a success or following, and people know who you are, casting directors know who you are. Sure. But if you don't go out to L.A., you know, and you get the whole scope of the thing, then you don't understand what you're actually missing. So,
well, and there's also the kind of like, if you never go out to L.A. and go for it, you can kind of always be the guy be like, well, I didn't even bother with that. Like, you'll never know whether you were
exactly
good enough or lucky enough or whatever, because you nipped it in the bud before you even had a chance to succeed.
Yeah. And so there's a certain amount of the business, amount of the industry that takes place. It, you know, a lot of movies don't get shot in L.A. anymore. A lot more stuff is shot in Atlanta than anywhere.
Yeah.
And so, but the decisions are made there. And so I, you know, was competing. I was actually competing with people who were in front of the people who were making the decisions and getting close, even though I never met those people.
Right.
So, but it's a different thing when you walk in the room and you come there. I always say, if you go to L.A. with New York hustle, nothing can stop you.
Totally.
So once I showed up, it was like, oh, that's it? Like,
yeah.
Now we got New York Hustle. We're in LA.
So
give me this mic.
So what was the life that you were envisioning for yourself long term here? Like, you were getting by, you were living, and you were in this, like, sounds like really great cultural and artistic community where you were inspired.
Mm-hmm.
So were you content to like, this is the next 50 years of my life, doing bit parts here and there, doing theater here and there, teaching where I had to, and this is going to be fine?
I don't think I knew. I mean, I had plays that were being done throughout the country that I had written.
That you written, yeah.
And, you know, I had, you know, I was doing, you know, roles on, like, guest starring roles or recurring roles. More so guest star roles. On TV things here. I was getting close to things here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was theater. I was doing some theater off Broadway, like acting in theater off Broadway and directing things here and there. So I didn't really know. Mm-hmm. Like, all of those roads could lead to a substantial success.
Sure.
You know, any one of them. And it wasn't like I was far away from any of them.
Right.
So it was just a...
Keep your head down, and at some point it's going to...
Yeah, all of those things I was doing very well at. If I saw somebody and they told me my exact story, and they would say, well, what do I do? I'd be like, you're doing great.
Just keep going. Yeah,
just keep going. And so it was just a thing of, you know, it had to be the right thing to tip me over.
And was writing and directing and acting, was doing all three of those things equally creatively satisfying and inspiring? Was it sort of strategic or was it?
Yes. The answer is yes. Yeah. Yes. It was equally like, in other words, they're all different. You know, I still, you know, I have a film right now that that I've written that we have a director on that, you know, we're working on in a studio. And so I enjoy the process of sitting in the room, and in this, I have a writing partner. If you have a good writing partner, it's even better.
Sure.
You know, but sitting in a room, where you don't have to collaborate with, you know, 100 people, and you are sort of living in this, like, once you start writing something, the weird thing that happens once you start putting the pen to paper or you start typing it up, you begin to walk around sort of in your own story.
Yeah.
Things begin to come to you. And that process is a very, it's liberating and spiritual, and it's exhilarating that you get to create this world with your words. It's I love that process.
Yeah.
Just as much as I love acting.
Well, I was going to say, like, when things started on the acting front to really, like, gain momentum, and I guess 42 is the breakthrough, the one that really, like, suddenly jumpstarts it all. It seems like you didn't waste much time in terms of, the acting has now kicked up to another level, but you're a producer, for instance, on Marshall, right? So, and you talk about this other film you're developing. Like, you're not, like, compartmentalizing and saying, like, okay, now's the time just to act and I'll it's a long life. We'll get to that other stuff when I get to it. You're like, you're using the capital you've kind of like gotten from being cast in a Marvel movie, et cetera,
yeah,
to help these other projects and to fuel these other creative pursuits.
Well, it also helps the projects that you know about too. It helps the projects that I'm, that's why I have a producing credit on Marshall, is because I actually act like a producer on the film. I care about it on that level. You know, I'm giving notes on the script.
Because we know some actors get that credit. It's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, they're not necessarily doing that. You know, yeah. I will go shake hands and kiss babies so we can get the money or whatever it is. Yeah. So it's for me, you know, it's not like I just have the credit. I have the credit because I deserve it.
Right.
And I feel like those other tools that I have as a writer, as a director, come into play when I play the lead. If I play in the lead, I'm thinking about the whole film in a similar way as the director or the producer. I'm concerned not just about my character. I'm concerned about how the character fits in with all these other characters and whether this person's wardrobe is right or not, you know. So, you know, for me, it is always the bigger picture, whether or not I have the producing credit or whatever it is.
It's interesting because, you know, that first kind of quote-unquote big film, 42, playing Jackie Robinson. And I not exactly the same way, but, you know, I've had the privilege of talking to Harrison Ford in the past, and I know enough about him and the way he talks about his approach to filmmaking. And he talks about story. He talks about sort of being a cog in that wheel and in some similar ways to what you're talking about, in that, like, yeah, he's got a job to do, but he's not just on set just thinking about his job.
The thing about Harrison Ford is, you know, at the end of a day, I'll never forget this. At the end of one of our days, we were on the baseball field and they were like, "This is the martini." And Harrison Ford picks up a broom and starts sweeping.
Wow.
And he did it more than once. He did it outside, we did it inside.
Wasn't an ironic sweep.
No. He was like, "I'm going to help clean up. This is it." And I was like, "What?" Now I'm like, "Where's the dustpan? I got to do something, you know. I got to do something. He's sweeping." You know what I'm saying? He's blue collar, you know what I'm saying? He's not just sitting around waiting on people to look after him. I mean, he will do that too. Sure. But, you know, but he picked up the broom.
It's interesting because, you know, that film, if you look at your, you know, your credits, I mean, taking out the TV stuff that you'd done here and there before then, film-wise, you really hadn't done that much prior to 42.
Right.
You kind of made, like, again, we're talking about this kind of strange circuitous path, this leap to, like, leading man roles, like, without having to do a ton of supporting parts in film.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious, did you feel like it was a jump, or did you feel, again, you weren't, like, 22 years old, you'd lived a life, you'd been living this very artistically, culturally rich life in the theater. So did it feel like, oh shit, I'm out of my element, or oh shit, I'm ready for this? This is what I prepared for.
Yeah, it felt like I was ready for it. You know, I had been preparing for this all that time,
yeah.
And so it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm not ready to play a lead role. I was like, well, shoot, I got to do it. You know, I have to do it now, and I've been, you know. If I use the skills that I have, I'm ready to do this, and I've done it on stage, which I think is, you know, sometimes harder. So, you know, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is just a different stage.
Sure.
And you know, I have the benefit of them yelling cut and saying I want to do it again. Like that's
a luxury.
That's
actually
a luxury. Yeah.
Did it seems like you, like many performers, probably get off on sort of like the physical challenges of roles. If you look at some of these kind of early leading roles, like, you know, some commonality beyond the fact that you've played a bunch of real life people, of course, is the fact that Jackie Robinson, you know, Get On Up, I mean, Black Panther, these are all roles where you have the physicality is a huge part of the role. Is that fair to say that that's like a key for you to kind of find your character?
The weird thing is that I would say that I always start really, really small and internal. Mm. It always starts more like a whisper, more like meditation, more like stillness than anything. Because I feel like I don't want to pull things that don't belong into this new space, into this new journey. And I may have tendencies that I'm bringing into it. So it's important to like sort of get to a ground zero before you start.
No, that makes sense. You don't want to make the big choices early on.
Right, right. And so
send you down the wrong path.
Yeah, so it actually, to me, the more important part is the internal part. And I think from that, you begin to see a whole lot of different dynamics because you're still, you know, so... the physicality of like there's obviously you need a physicality for all these roles, and maybe not so much for Marshall, but there is a physicality to
it's a swagger to, there too.
Yeah. So, it to me, I think it's more so than the movement. It is the changing, like changing. Well, what does he look like?
Right.
You know, how do I change my body? To look like this person and that person because I've had to play these roles.
Right.
You know, trying to find some kind of in physical ends up happening, but I don't think it's the place I start.
Are you trying to find like the overlap in terms of who you are and who the person is, whether that's like, because I know you've talked about how one of the things to get over for you in taking this role was you didn't look like him.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
a big, you know, that's something to kind of get over psychologically, I guess, to,
right.
And make sure that everybody, family, whatever is on board.
Yeah. Like for, you know, the overlaps are always going to happen. There's always going to be some things that are the same. And you don't have to focus on those things as much. You do need to acknowledge them so you don't, like, leave them out.
Sure.
So in this case, you know, he went to Howard. We walked some of the same hallways, even though it was a different time period.
Right.
You know, he went to Howard University, graduated from there. I went to Howard University. Right. So there's a certain understanding about what that means.
Sure.
Like, because you're taught about the past at Howard. So I get, you know, I would get a little bit of Thurgood Marshall. From being there. Also, he spent time in New York, spent time in Harlem. And even though it's a different time period, it's a renaissance, you know, New York is always going to be sort of a tastemaker when it comes to the rest of the world. So sure. you have this guy going into small towns or southern towns or towns in the north. He's from New York, and people are going to look at him as he's one of those New Yorkers, but he's also a tastemaker.
Right.
He's also a person not only... coming there trying to bring a certain brand of justice that should exist throughout the country, but he's bringing a certain style, you know, a certain way of doing things, a certain way of talking, you know. There are stories of people coming into town to see Thurgood Marshall try a case because it had a theatricality to it. So it does, back to the physicality, it does end up being a thing of, you know, presence. You know,
do you for those that don't know a little bit about this film in particular, you know, it's not like the Cradle to Grave biopic,
right.
which is frankly tough to do. And, you know, you know that better than anybody. But like this one is an interesting take. Reginald Hundlin, by the way, is the director. That's an interesting filmmaker. When I heard that name associated with this, I was like, OK, this is going to be interesting. And it's as much a courtroom drama.
Mm hmm.
Thriller, political, or not political, courtroom thriller as it is a biopic. Do you feel like that you still get across kind of like the life of this man, even though it's like a finite period of time?
Yes, yes. Well, the thing about it is, you know, since you brought up Reggie, this movie is, you know, Reginald Hudlin has written Black Panther.
Yeah.
You know, he's written other comic books, has new comic books coming out right now. So he has that genre, you know, always sort of lingering in his work, you know, the idea of that superhero. So this is actually like a superhero origin story.
Totally feels like an origin story.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because yeah. Ultimately, for those who know who Thurgood Marshall ends up becoming,
right.
You know, he becomes the guy that wins 29 of 32 cases in the Supreme Court. Becomes a Supreme Court justice and himself makes laws, and I skipped Brown versus Board of Education. But,
that little thing,
know,
too.
That little thing that allows us to sit beside each other in school. But he becomes this person, but he's not that person in this story.
Right.
So the origin of this superhero is like, well, how does he get to that point. That's this movie. And I think also you have this man who has the odds against him, the odds of time and space. Yeah. Like, he's racing across the country to fight injustice in several places. That's a superhero theme, you know, time and space being your enemy. Even though you may have the power, you can't save everybody.
Right.
So,
it's also kind of like the superhero in secret. Like, he's kind of like the background.
Yeah.
Like, he can't be the front facing.
Exactly.
Hero.
Exactly. So it has all of those elements. So I feel like, you know, in doing this movie, there's even the Western. There's even like the guy coming into town that's literally why they call it Marshall. He's the guy coming into town to implement justice.
That's awesome.
He only works alone. He doesn't want to work with this guy. So that's
the books are his guns.
Yeah, the books are his guns. So the weird thing about it is when I read all that. And I realized, well, this is actually his real story.
Mm.
You know, you absolutely get the history. Like, it's crazy that it is true. It is crazy that he actually did have that swagger. It's crazy that he was that charismatic. And it's crazy that he actually tried those number of cases.
Mm.
But you get the sense of what he's going to become and the history. Like, it's one little story they tell about Howard in the film as I'm eating a sandwich. Like, you know, I tell the story about how I, you know, sued the University of Maryland. I went to Howard, and Howard wasn't a good school, and it ends up becoming a great law school. That the history is sort of told in a sort of like in passing way.
Right.
And you don't get bogged down in it in this movie.
I mean, if there is some commonality in some of these characters you've played kind of early in your film career, you know, a bunch of icons, whether it's comic book heroes, literally or figuratively, these real life kind of champions of justice and change and arts. Is there a desire for you to be like the nebbishy, like less heroic person?
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to play the hero, play these icons, but wouldn't it be nice to play something with less, like, import attached to it?
Yes, absolutely. Like, you know, not to say that I don't want this to continue, but you want to have variety.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You want to be the everyday man, you know? And so it's the truth is, like, you know, that's what I was looking for when this came, you know? I don't want to say that's what I was looking for when Black Panther came, because, you know, I was definitely looking for Black Panther to come. But, you know, I was looking for that, you know, everyday modern guy that you, you know. And those scripts have come, and I've agreed to do them, and they've fallen apart, too.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not like I haven't tried.
It's easier to greenlight the kind of the bigger stories in a way. So, when was the first conversation about Black Panther? Can you give me a little bit of the timeline? Now it's according to like what I'm reading, it seems like it's about 3 years ago. Does that sound about right?
2014. I don't even know what the day is. So you talking about like going back years?
I guess what I'm curious about is how long were we talking before like that official big announcement that you guys?
We were on the press. I'm gonna look over here because I may get some help. I was on the press tour for Get On Up.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what year that was.
That's right. It's a while back. It's like, suffice to say.
But I was on the press tour for Get On Up. I was in Zurich. And I actually didn't have international calling on my phone. And on that day, I heard a voice say, "You need to get international calling on your phone. Call your mom right now." Like, she, because, you know, you can't get your mom to use Skype or anything. Like, it's just not going to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, it wasn't working. So I got international, called my mom, and that night my agent called me while we were out, or else, you know, I wouldn't have gotten this phone call if I hadn't done that. Called me while we were out, and he said, "Hey, you need to get on the phone with Marvel in like 15 minutes. And I was like, "I'm walking on the red carpet." He's like, "Get off the red carpet and have this phone call." So it happened. This was probably like, I'm going to say it was September, October. Help me. was like 2 or 3 months before it was announced.
And what was that called? Was that like literally, was that an offer or like, would you be open to this? Or, cause you never auditioned, right? You never had to do the screen test or anything.
It was just like, we heard you were interested. You were interested in this role. I think you know what it is. You know, Marvel is funny. I think you know what it is.
Don't make me say it out loud.
And I was like, if it's what I think it is, yes, I want to do it. And they were like, cool, because we think we're going to bring this character into the movie we're doing right now, which is obviously became Civil War.
Sure.
And then essentially they were like, everybody's here. Like, everybody was on the phone call. Feige, the Russo brothers, Nate Moore. It was like, Luis Esposito, everybody was on the phone call. And so I was like, okay, yeah, of course I'll do it. And I think I was in Portugal maybe 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. and then the actual offer came in. So, but I had to be quiet for a couple of months.
It's amazing to think, I mean, like, because if you look at any of the other leading guys, like, they all had to audition, whether it's Downey, Evans, Hemsworth. They had to fight tooth and nail. Not to say you didn't fight for it. You put it out there.
Right.
But it's a pretty cool position to be in, the way this went down.
Right. Well, I can't tell you why it went that way for me. Right. But
I'm curious, because we were talking about sort of like being creatively involved, and you had the unique opportunity of being involved in this before a director was attached. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, so did that help you kind of like steer... Were you able to kind of steer the direction of the character because you kind of came on board so early on? Do you feel like any early notes that you gave to Kevin and company have lasted through the development process?
Yes.
To where we are today?
Yes, I would definitely say so. You know, and the thing about it is the character, you know, first of all, Marvel, I think, is really smart. And they're going to take any great ideas and use them. And I feel like the director that they ended up bringing on, Ryan Coogler, is also really smart. And so we just, the collaboration process, when everybody in the room wants something to work, ego is out of the way, and there's a passion for something, ultimately that's you have a great chance of making something special.
Yeah.
So yeah, there were certain things that I loved about the character, even before I knew it was coming, that I had written in a journal. And I told him everything I loved about Black Panther before we started.
Can you give me an example of like something you said?
Jesus. There's for instance, there's a particular scene with... I don't want to tell. You almost got me.
You almost got me.
Jesus. I almost did it. No, I can't tell you nothing.
Okay.
I can't tell you
nothing.
A couple
quick things before you go. Because, yes, we'll have time to talk about this more in length, at length when it comes out. Have you seen a cut of the film, though? Have you seen...
I haven't seen a complete cut, no.
Okay. You feeling good?
I feel good. Yeah, I feel good.
You have to also feel good about sort of the early reception. I mean, like, you know, in a different way, you know, Wonder Woman went through this, like, where it felt like before it came out, like, the weight of the world was on this film. Like, right. If this doesn't succeed, like, this, it was like, oh, that could be it. We might wait 5 years for another female-led superhero film.
See, I didn't feel that way. I thought Wonder Woman was going to do well anyway.
No, I hear you, but, like, there was... Who knows? We don't know now.
I felt like Wonder Woman was going to do well, and I automatically thought that there would be other chances because there was also, you know, Captain Marvel.
Sure, that was already, yeah.
So I was like, they're going to make this work one way or the other because they have to. They have to do it. I didn't feel that way, but I am glad that Wonder Woman was successful.
So what about for Black Panther? Do you think, like, God forbid, for whatever reason, it doesn't work with audiences, the Cyborg not get greenlit? Do you feel like a weight of that in terms
yes.
of, like...
That's what I'm saying. I feel the weight of it from that perspective way more. I think we walked into this saying we can't fail, like, oh my gosh, like, I don't want to mess this up, like, it'll be the worst thing in the world if we don't get this right. And I'm not saying that I don't know what other people felt, but I just know I look at it and I go, as a Black man,
and you don't want to be the guy.
I didn't want to be the guy that didn't do it well.
Are you ready to play this character for another decade of your life? Are you like?
Sure. Sure. I haven't signed my life away to 10 more films, but I want to play it as long as I should play it, and I want to also play other stuff. I want to still have that flexibility in my body of work.
Are you done with the Atlanta for Avengers 3 and 4? I don't know how involved you are in those, but
I can't answer.
Oh
that.
Boy! It sounds like there might be some fights in your future. Okay.
I can't answer that question.
Okay, well, last thing on it. Has it been fun to mix it up with this kind of insane cast and kind of play against a few different characters you probably haven't had an opportunity?
We're talking about Marshall.
I'm talking about Avengers. Now.
Avengers.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody is where they are for a reason. Let me put it like that. Like I want nobody from my clan. Like nobody. I'm paraphrasing that because I'm trying to be clean on you.
That's okay. This audience knows better. Would you consider Downey a mentor? Is he somebody that's
absolutely nobody did it better. You know what I'm saying? Like not just on screen, but just the way he lives. Yeah. Like he's a cool person. He's sincere about the things that he believes in. He sincerely wants you to do well. Yeah, definitely. And to everybody, he is.
How, moving past Marshall and the Avengers stuff, you mentioned the script that you've been developing. You have a director attached. When do you think we're going to see you direct? Because obviously that was an early ambition. Do you think will you have time to squeeze that into?
Yeah. It probably won't be in 2018, but yeah, maybe 2019.
Nice. And theater, who knows? I mean, it's tough when you have all these opportunities. It's tough to kind of
It's just trying to figure out the time is the issue. Is like when I don't know how many conversations I have with people, and that's like, come on, let's do something together. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And it's like, when
I'm booked 18 months.
It's a good champagne problems.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as I said, I was looking forward to this because we haven't had a chance to talk at length, and I've been a real admirer of your work, and to hear you talk so eloquently about the interesting path that you've been on and the cool kind of choices you're making. I think it's probably inspiring to a lot of young actors out there that might be listening to this.
Yeah, like for me, it's the thing of I think you should always choose what you love, and what you love might not have a lot of money attached to it.
Right.
And that's if you go back to the early part of our conversation, what you love, it may not pay that well. And so there's certain decisions you need to make for the sake of business. But other decisions need to remain true to the art, because in the end, that's what you get known for.
Totally.
You get known for that. And those things do eventually pay.
Yeah. Well, you put in the work, man, and all your success is clearly well deserved. Hopefully this is the first long chat of many.
Yep.
Congrats, man.
Thank you.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.